This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to On Target. I'm your host, Penny Wolfgang, and thank you so much for joining me each week. We try to talk about subjects that we think are interesting and important to all of us here in Western New York, and we try to introduce you to people that we think you might want to know more about, to meet people who are making a difference to us in our daily lives. And my guest today is one of those people, and I'm hoping that after you listen to our conversation, you are going to say, not only am I privileged and honored to know this person, but it was so educational and enlightening to listen to him talk. And the reason I say this is because I just had the privilege of listening to our guest. This is like guess the name or something like that. No, I'm going to tell you who it is. I just had the privilege of listening to Michael Martin talk to a group of us of the 8th Judicial District when we were celebrating Native American Heritage Month, which was last month in November, right? And my guest, Michael Martin, is the executive director of the Native American Community Services of Erie and Niagara County. And we just were so engrossed and enlightened by listening to Mr. Martin describe not only the services, but the history, the background, and what the meaning is of many Native American cultural aspects that we are not aware of or familiar with. I learned so much. And what I really learned, among other things, was what a fabulously interesting language. And the Honorable Mark Montour, who is one of my colleagues on the Supreme Court bench, opened and closed the program by speaking to us in, it would be what language? I mean, it had a name.
He did it in Mohawk, yeah.
Say it again.
The Mohawk language.
The Mohawk language. And it was a blessing, right?
It's a Thanksgiving address.
Yeah. Okay, so welcome, Michael Martin, and are you going to be able to bless us and my listeners, too?
I can certainly try.
You will, won't you?
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely.
If Judge Montour can do it, I know you can.
Well, I can do it, and I'll do it. I'm not as fluent, actually. He impressed me as well that he was able to
recite
the whole thing.
He said he was taking lessons.
Yeah, we're trying to preserve the languages. It's unfortunately, for various reasons that maybe some will get into in the program, we've lost a lot of language acquisition, and it's a struggle. So I know bits and pieces, but not fluent enough to do the full address. But I could do it in English, which I can provide the translation as we're going along, too, so people can actually benefit from the words as well.
Why don't we begin by explaining to our listeners your background here in Western New York?
Sure. Well, first, it's an honor and a privilege. Thank you for having me on your program.
You're so welcome.
I really appreciate the opportunity to come carry on our conversation that we started that day. And it's a great opportunity to share. And I was born here, raised in Buffalo, New York, on the west side. Went to like Hutch Tech High School in Buffalo State in my undergrad. And I got recruited for a corporate program. And like many of my generation there, we left. I came back after my son was born, though, because I wanted him to be a Bills and Sabres fan. And I couldn't have him being raised somewhere else and not
have
him as an opportunity.
Good timing.
Yeah, but that was... Yeah, he's 21 now, yeah. So he went through a lot of
hard and lean
years, especially for the Bills. But he is a diehard fan, but more so, seriously, I wanted him to be raised by the community that raised me. I was so thankful for the not just my native community, but the Western New York community that I grew up in the city of Buffalo, and I wanted to have those same opportunities, in particular to our culture, because I wanted him to be able to play lacrosse in our traditional game, and to have access to be able to go to longhouse ceremonies, just like my parents had taken me and my siblings as we were growing up. And there's teachings in there that you don't maybe realize until later in life, like myself, that inform how we're supposed to be and how we're supposed to carry ourselves, and different principles of giving back and leadership that we have that get embedded through those different opportunities that we have in our community. And I wanted him to have those same sort of opportunities. And I find myself now trying to provide all of our youth in the community some of those same opportunities where they don't always get them as well. And like I said, I did actually come back in a corporate career, but was unfulfilled. And I actually started my own business doing some personal coaching and organizational development and consulting stuff. And I ended up back at Native American Community Services doing some consulting work, where I actually worked my first two semesters of undergrad at Buff State. Our office was at just up the road at Grant Street, and I got to work with some youth, and it was just kind of came full circle many years later after our corporate career to become the executive director after consulting them for some time. And I thought I'd be there for a couple years, and that was back in 2004. So I always say I'm one who sees challenges as opportunities, and we had a lot of challenges organizationally and in our community, but I am thankful we turned those into good opportunities to do some really great initiatives and programs for our people, and try to help create a better pathway to health and well-being for not just our Native community, but all those that we serve.
What are the challenges? What are some of the challenges that you considered paramount when you first, when you've been working with the, you know, as executive director of the community services?
Well, I know when I was there many years before becoming director, when I was an undergrad at Buff State, that working with some of the youth and then now coming back later as the executive director and seeing those youth I originally worked with now as adults themselves facing some of the same challenges that their parents were facing of unhealthy choices, poor this other different family dysfunction and abuses, and thinking, well, okay, why aren't we breaking the cycle? And as executive director, I looked at our contracts, and we were meeting or exceeding our contract goals and deliverables. And to me, it just indicated we weren't doing the right things to break that sort of cycle of issues upon our people. And so we really set out to try to explore that. And what we found is that a lot of the issues are generational. We were doing what they called evidence-based programming for youth, and a lot of the youth were actually trying to go home and be the educators in their households. But what happens is, you know, they look around their family and they see a lot of those same abusive, like poor behaviors within their, you know, their siblings, their parents, their grandparents, maybe their aunties, uncles, cousins, and they think they give up. It saddened me that they would give up and think that's just who their family is. And it actually would make me mad, though, if they looked around our Native community and said, saw some of those same issues and thought that's who they were because we were Native. That's not who we are because we were Native. It's what we became because of intergenerational issues to what we call historical traumas upon our people. And probably what we discovered is the most probably prevalent of that is the impact of residential and boarding schools on our people. I don't know if you're familiar with that era, other than maybe what
no,
we
but
shared.
It, but you, I became a little familiar at your talk, and I was hoping you would bring that up because I don't think our listeners are aware of it either,
yeah.
And it was paramount and of importance to you and your community.
Absolutely, and it's something we're still learning about because it was in 2000. So as I said, we were trying to do some strategic planning about really trying to get to the underlying needs of our people. And in 2006, we had a mini health grant to identify the top health priorities in the two counties we were serving in Buffalo and Erie County and Niagara Falls and Niagara County. And in both, the top health priority was alcoholism and substance abuse. And I guess that wasn't new information. We almost expected that. We did have high rates of alcoholism and substance abuse affecting our families, mostly alcoholism. We knew that. And but in those workshops, we had a talking circle of asking people for a little bit more, getting in behind the responses. And I had just started to hear a little bit more about the residential and boarding school experience, largely out of Canada. My family, both sides of my family, come from the Six Nations of the Grand River Territory, which is about an hour and a half west of Buffalo in southern Ontario, just outside Brantford, Ontario. And a lot of people, like my parents and grandparents' generation, came into Buffalo, which is a big city and economic opportunity, and stayed. And what we found is, as I was going back and forth and hearing about some of the healing they were doing around these residential and boarding schools, they had a school there called the Mohawk Institute, or it was often referred to as the Mushhole. And we also had boarding schools here in Western New York and on the Cattaraugus Territory, the Seneca Nation, which was called the Thomas Indian School. And others like the Carlisle School, which was in eastern Pennsylvania, which was the first in this model. And what we discovered is the intergenerational impact of these schools was even bigger than we had thought. And what we had the talking circles with the identifying the top health priorities, and it was alcoholism, and I had put it out to the circle, how much do these residential and boarding schools have to do with our high rates of alcoholism and substance abuse? And one of the elders who was in the circle, I can't remember exactly how she said it, but she kind of said, yeah, it does. And she quickly stopped talking. And I was taught, don't open something you can't close. And so I just, it just indicated to me there was something there to look at. And in 2008, we had our very first community forum on boarding schools. And we had some, we don't call them graduates or alumni, we call them survivors. We found out that there was all kinds of forms of abuse in these schools. It really started in the 1800s, where the U.S. government was, and we, and our filmmaker, we did a documentary in 2009 called Unseen Tears that looked at the impact of these schools here in Western New York. It was funded through the Community Foundation for Greater Buffalo's channels, stories of the Niagara Frontier Initiative, and we worked with Buffalo Squeaky Wheel, and we were partnered with a filmmaker, Ron Douglas, who was at the time a graduate student at University of Buffalo, and we worked on this short documentary, and as part of that, we found the, Ron had found the U.S. archives, the actual decision and discussion of, is it, should the U.S. government continue to fight a war against Native people, you know, trying to basically kind of kill us off, and the expense of that, and not only the U.S. lives, but also this, the military costs and expenses of continuing a war like that, or this other model of trying to educate us and civilize, that there was an Army officer, Pratt, who was proposing to try to tame and civilize us, that we used the words like savage. And in those documents, the strategy was laid out to take the children as far away from their people and put them in these schools far away so they wouldn't be tempted to go back to their savage ways. And unfortunately, in that process, they weren't allowed to speak their language, and many took at very young ages. And if any listener out there can even imagine this, as a young child of 5 years old, the only family you know, a loving family, and you're all of a sudden taken away to a far distant place, not with any contact to your family, you can't speak your language, and unfortunately, that's hard for somebody to do. And so when they spoke their language, unfortunately, there's all kinds of forms of abuse. And we hear about the scandals with sexual abuse, you know, within the church. There's a lot of abuse within in this model of, well, we had not only the mental, emotional abuse, physical and spiritual abuse, but also stories of sexual abuse. And we know in human services that a child who's abused is likely to grow up and perpetrate that abuse or have very severe coping mechanisms like alcoholism and substance abuse to hide the pain, shame, guilt, fear that they might still be facing. If they don't otherwise get a remedy to those things, to those issues that they've been dealing with. And these were done intergenerationally. So what happens is, we learn how to parent based on how we're parented. And these, many of our generations of Native children were taken and put in these schools, and they were basically parented by these institutions that were abusing them. And they come out, they get aged out, and they then have kids of their own, and they're going to pass on the only way they know. We had some of the people, even in the documentary we did, say, I didn't know that was any different. I thought that's just the way all kids were treated. And, you know, so what happens is that sets up an intergenerational then passing on of those traumas on, and to the point where it became like our Native people were being traumatized, but not even really knowing where it was from, because people really didn't talk about those experiences. And so it wasn't until, we had started to have that first conversation we had in 2008 in our office. We had a lot of tears shed that day. The room was packed. And we had a survivor from the Thomas Indian School and a survivor from the Mohawk Institute sharing their stories. Well, not a survivor from the Thomas Indian School. It was a daughter of a survivor who was sharing their story of what they were finding about their parents' experience and other family members. And a lot of tears were shed that day because for the first time, many of our community members were able to understand and say, they were saying things like, well, now I know why my dad couldn't hug me, because he went to those schools and he didn't get that love and affection there. Now I know why my mom couldn't tell me she loved me, because she wasn't getting that as a young child herself, because she was in these schools. And so we've been really spending every, you know, pretty much the time since then. And I said that day that it was going to be a historical day, because it was the first day we were going to start to do something about that as an organization and as a community. And since then, we've launched a lot of initiatives, not only to understand that impact upon our people of that and other traumas upon our people, but also then how do we start with the healing? And that led to a lot of more positive initiatives around the traditional teachings of the good mind, and an initiative we have statewide now called the Gathering of Good Minds, where we're really trying to help our community to move forward more positively intergenerationally. from those negative experiences.
If you just tuned in today, you are listening to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang. And in the studio with me today is Michael Martin. And Mr. Martin's the executive director of the Native American Community Services of Erie and Niagara Counties. I should say that because you mentioned already that you do cover Erie and Niagara Counties. Where... We talked about the schools with the boarding school aspect. Where are you located? Where are the Native Americans that you're dealing with located now?
We have three offices. Our main office is in Buffalo at 1005 Grant Street, just north of Amherst Street before Military in the YWCA Schoolhouse Commons. That's our main office. We also have offices in Niagara Falls and Lockport, primarily serving the urban areas. In the urban communities of Erie, Niagara Counties, and Niagara Falls and Buffalo in particular, that we're kind of concentrated where our Native population is generally around in the Black Rock Riverside area. The history of it is, like I said, I grew up on the west side. It was heavily Native and Italian back in the day, and we both kind of moved north. The Italian population kind of moved into North Buffalo, and we continued along that west corridor into the Black Rock Riverside area. The Native American Magnet School, School 19, is based on West and West Delavan, created in the 1970s because that was the seat of the Native population. There's a pocket in South Buffalo as well, and in addition to the adjacent areas to the Nation territories, and like Cattaraugus, Tuscarora, and the Tonawanda Seneca is out near Akron, and then beyond. And like I said, we have a lot of people who've come in from southern Ontario, too, into our area and have stayed. A large percent of the population is now living off territory into the urban areas as well. So we don't get really good census numbers for because there's lack of participation, largely due to sovereignty reasons around participating in that, and we have some treaty arrangements that kind of are still to this day up in terms of interpretation for people to participate. So our numbers are generally underrepresented in census numbers, and we have a really large and vibrant population, even that being said, compared to other cities in the United States. And so having services and allowing people to reconnect back to their culture and their identity. But we do service all facets of the population, not just the Native population. We find non-Native clients that come into our services also benefit from a different perspective than maybe they get elsewhere as well. So we're very fortunate to be in those locations. And we do a lot of initiatives beyond Erie and Niagara counties now. We might actually have to take that off our name because we do things in other parts of the state, and we have some statewide initiatives now. And so we're kind of being we're kind of growing beyond just our original boundaries there.
When you mentioned the issues before, you mentioned, which I think is in the public's mind very, very prevalent or synonymous with Native American issues, which is alcoholism and drugs and substance abuse. However, I think you were probably very much involved with the economics and the health, both of those aspects, which were important to improve in the Native American situation.
Yes, we've been very good at living in poverty sometimes. Our community is a history of survivors. I mean, we always look back, and we were taught to think generationally. Every decision and action we make, we have to ensure the well-being seven generations down the road, just as we can look back seven generations before us. And that's hard for people to kind of conceptualize. I've always kind of like great, 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 great. Great-grandchildren.
Yes.
It's hard for people to think of that. That's what our traditional leadership, our chiefs and our clan mothers, always have to put that in the forefront of their mind. With our clients, we try to make it a little bit more accessible. We say, think of seven generations in a microcosm. Yourself is one generation, and then look back three to your parents, your grandparents, and if you're so lucky enough to know your great-grandparents, and give thanks for the wonderful things that left you, but understand some of the things that they might have been impacted by and how that helps to make you who you are. And then look forward three generations, completing the seven, to your children, your grandchildren, if you're so lucky enough to meet your great-grandchildren, and what is the legacy you want to leave for them. And what we talk about with these issues of trauma and alcoholism and substance abuse, the benefit of like doing the Gnonio or the Thanksgiving address like the Judge Montour had done is it helps to set what we call Ganaquillo or Ganagohio, the good mind. And the good mind is a personal power. It's a perspective that leads to health and well-being and what we call scano, peace and well-being. And the opposite of the good mind, though, isn't a bad or evil mind. It's a clouded mind, as the way we like to frame it, because things can cloud our minds, just like the sun getting clouded on a rainy, stormy day. Or best analogy is you take off on an airplane and it's rainy and it's dark and it's gloomy, but as soon as you get up to cruising altitude, right, what happens? The sun comes
out.
It's a
miracle.
Right? Yeah, that sun's always there. That's like the good mind. It's always there for everyone to achieve, except sometimes we get clouds that come into our mindset that we lose sight of that good mind. And when that happens over a period of time, it starts to affect us at a deeper level. Just like they have, you know, here in the Northeast, when you don't have enough sun, natural sunlight, it starts to affect you physically, emotionally. People get depressed, and that they call that seasonal affective disorder. And it's the same thing with our good mind teachings. When people don't have access or that clarity of the good mind, they also start to get impacted at a more deeper level. And sometimes those clouds are temporary. You know, I always say if there's like hunger, they say you get hangry, when you don't have enough to eat, or if you don't get enough sleep, you get irritable, you're short with people, maybe not yourself, or if you have to go to the bathroom and you're trying to listen to somebody, you're like, oh, when are they going to stop talking so I can go to the bathroom? Those are temporary fixes. If you're hungry, eat. If you're tired, sleep. If you have to go to the bathroom, take care of your own needs, right? But if there's, sometimes the clouds are thicker and they last longer, just like those overcast days sometimes we get in winter, issues of grief and loss of other things like desire. Obviously, alcoholism and substance use and abuse can judge or cloud a mind, and someone's judgment takes them away from who they're intended to be. And we always feel in our teachings we have a benevolent creator, one who intends us to be healthy and well. And that Thanksgiving address that Mark does, it's not a prayer as much as asking for anything. We're giving thanks for all of these gifts in creation that were given and provided to us to help us to keep healthy and well. And so, like, one of the things we start out in that address giving thanks to the people. Whenever we're together, whenever people gather, we're supposed to put these words out. We call them, they're also referred to as the words that come before all else, because before we do anything, whether it's a business meeting like a council meeting or a fun event like a social, we're supposed to say these words to bring everybody that's there together with a good mind. And that when good minds gather, there's extra positive energy gets created. We call it orenda. And so these words are intended to help restore our good-mindedness when we're together in that shared safe space. And the first verse of that is really acknowledging and giving thanks to the people that they arrived there safely. Just driving here, there's accidents and people don't make it to their destination sometimes they don't make it at home at the end of the day. And so the fact those people that are gathered arrive safely, we give thanks to them that they're there, they're healthy and well. And we've acknowledged those that aren't there with us. Maybe it's people that intended to be and couldn't make it, or people who maybe friends, colleagues, or other family members that are weighing on our minds, whether it's a child with a big exam or a sports tryout or a colleague with a work deadline or a family member with a health issue. They might be weighing on our minds when we're gathered, but we acknowledge that and set it aside, not to think any less of them, but to be present with each other, because when our lives come together in those moments, it's like a sacred time. You think about everyone from the moment they're born and all their life's journeys, they're intersecting at that very moment. And we want to honor and respect that time together and be present with each other however brief it may be. And so that's where it kind of helps us to lay that out. And we'll think about those that came before us and those that are yet to come. And after the end of each verse, they'll pause and they'll say, now we give thanks for the people, and we bring our minds together as one and we give thanks. And usually when we do this in our community, you'll hear a response like a yeah, an acknowledgement of what the speaker is saying. Because, and there's a practical aspect, because if my mind does start to wander, I got to go do this after work, I got to, and if I'm not doing it, the person next to me says, oh yeah, I'm submitting reminder, I'm supposed to be listening, I'm supposed to be using this to create my good mind and be present with each other. And so there's very practical things in our teachings as well. And really the verses, there's nothing written down. I mean, there are written versions, but it's really, it's an oral tradition. It's what the speaker thinks the community needs or the people assembled need at that time. And I've sat through some very long Thanksgiving addresses, but typically I was kind of taught to go from the ground up. So we would give thanks to Mother Earth, and we give thanks to like the waters and the fishes in those waters. And again, we're just acknowledging these gifts of creation that we both need to be healthy and well, but we're gifted to us to be healthy and well. And like just simple water, you know, no matter where you are on this earth, all life, not even just human beings, wherever there's water, life can thrive. And the absence of water, you know, it's challenged. And we know you can only go so many days without water before you die. Even going without water, you get dehydrated. It starts affecting you mentally, emotionally, physically. And so just the simple act of having clean drinking water, you know, we're just acknowledging that it's there and we give thanks to it. And, you know, they're looking through the vastness of the universe or try to find another planet with water on it that can support life as we know. We haven't found it yet, as far as I know. And what a special gift that is. We have that here, but it's also a fragile gift. So by honoring and appreciating it, it starts to not only be a nice thought, but affects our the good mind is supposed to affect our thoughts, attitudes, actions, and behaviors. And that's why, you know, living in these perspectives, and this is our Haudenosaunee teachings or people of the Longhouse, but a lot of indigenous cultures have similar, and I think really the good mind is a universal teaching across many people and cultures. But it's why you see indigenous people maybe rise up to protect clean waters, because we know how valuable and scarce a resource it really is. So when people try to put pipelines across them, you know, you'll see us rise up and maybe try to protect those waters, because it's hard for them to protect themselves. And we're, as human beings, are doing those things to them. So there's the call to consciousness, really, about some of these things. So this Thanksgiving address, as we go throughout it, are just those little reminders. You know, we'll go on, we'll give thanks to the plant world, those things, those plants that we use to feed our bodies, and we might give special acknowledgement to what we call our three sisters, corn, beans, and squash. And even in there is embedded a reminder, because when we planted those three together, the corn stalk rose up, the beans grow around that corn stalk using that stalk as support, puts nitrogen back in the ground, and then the squash dampens out the weeds at the bottom. So they worked together to support each other, help each other be healthy, just like sisters do, right?
Yes.
Every sister.
Yes. My sister isn't listening, but I'm thinking of her. You know, yeah. The Thanksgiving, what you were just describing, it's a perfect time of year for us to be talking about this.
Yeah.
At this time of this season, and I'm sure it's appropriate all year round, but Thanksgiving and the holidays and this time of year, I'm so glad that we had an opportunity to talk to you and to realize how fortunate all of us are to be here and to have all of the basic elements that you were talking about. And I'm sorry that we couldn't talk longer, but we'll talk again soon. I want to tell my listeners that my guest has been Michael Martin, the Executive Director of Native American Community Services of Erie and Niagara Counties, and further. And thank you so much for listening, and thanks for being with me today, Mr. Martin. And goodbye, everybody. Have a really good week.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.